him.
You're not gonna say it. Somebody should. Let's talk about two time. Let's talk about bum wine, yeah. You're asking the questions that nobody could. Like where the bone thugs in. Are they in harmony?
Hey everybody, welcome. I'm a little toasted. So they had a bar down the street from me, the 16th Street Tavern, or Grand Lakes Tavern, something. Grand Lakes 16th Street Tavern at Grand Lakes 16th Street. And it closed. They closed, the owner sold it to someone else, and he reopened. And he reopened today. So I went to go have a couple beers because I was like, this was my hangout. This was my spot. This was my cheers. One of my life goals that I'm crossing off the list is to, at some point in your life, have the bar that is right outside your door. I think that's half the success of the show, How I Met Your Mother, which is like the fantasy aspect of that show. Besides, there's the normal sitcom fantasy aspect, which is we live in New York City in Manhattan, and here's our apartment, and it's enormous. But then the other fantasy aspect of that is attainable, however, is like, I want to live in walking distance of a bar where everybody knows my drinks. And even if it stinks... I just spilled a little beer on myself. I wanted to wear this sweatshirt to work tomorrow, and I have impaired my ability to do that. But anyway, so the place it was before was that was that for me. That was like my go-to spot. And also, I had a book club going there. It was the place. And now it's a new place. And I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it. So they redecorated. So when the first place opened, the tavern, they, did a bunch of work on it and stuff and made it pretty nice, I thought. And, it had like a wood paneled interior and stuff like that. And this new place, they took the wood off the walls and painted it all white. And there's nothing on the walls. They're all blank. When I was in there just now, there was this young woman talking to one of the guys who's running the place and was like, are you going to put stuff up on the walls? And he's like, I don't know, And she's like, oh, well, the old place had horrible stuff on the wall. I hated it and blah, blah, blah. And I was just like, what is wrong with you? She's like, they had crappy art on the wall. And I was like, what do you want this to be, an art museum or a bar? Excuse you. How dare you? How dare you say that? I don't know. It's like, what do you want a bar to be like? I guess that's the fundamental question. And apparently she wanted it to be like a nice gallery, which I can't abide. I mean, I guess I could abide that, but I'm just like, I don't know, man. It was like a neighborhood bar, and I like that. And then, the new one, it's very sterile in there. It's very white. The walls are all white. The wood is dark and nicely finished and everything, but like, I don't know. It's just like they did a lot of work to make it very plainer. And she's like, I like this, the minimal look. And I'm like, no, a minimal look is like, when you're talking about a bar, a minimal look is not in existence if there are two giant LCD screens that are showing the types of beers they have. Give me a fucking break. And, like, I don't begrudge them that. But then, I heard people ordering beers, and they were kind of like, well, so taps 1 through 15 are kept at this temperature, and taps 15 through 30 are at this temperature, and so on. And I did like, they had, like, 30 beers on tap there, which is cool. And they're all Colorado beers, which is nice. But, I don't know. I just have something against the whole okay, we keep this one at this many degrees and this one at this many degrees, because I'm like, what if I just want to like drink a beer, man? I just want to come in there and have a beer and have that be the thing. So I don't know. We'll have to see. We'll have to see how things turn out. I'm nervous. It's the first night, and I was happy about the selection, but not necessarily about the whole setup and where it looks like things are going. Oh, I like this minimalist setup. It's not a minimalist setup just because you didn't hang anything on the wall. It's like, in order to have a minimalist setup, you have to sort of have things that you've removed from the space, I think. Not just like, we never hung anything up. And the lighting was just like track lighting that I was like, I don't know, maybe you guys are too young to hate track lighting. Maybe it's like way better than fluorescent to you, but to me it's like, this is on par with fluorescent. So I don't know. Sometimes this is what makes me think I want to open a bar. But then everything about actually working and running a bar is like, oh, wait, I think I would hate that. This is like the same thing I experience, you know, when I tell people online, like I was, you know, I'm part of a Facebook group and everyone's like, what does everyone do? And I'm like, librarian. And they're like, that's my dream job. And I'm like, is it? Is it your dream job? I just like spent 20 minutes when I was supposed to be leaving trying to fix a printer because someone had improperly installed a toner waste container. A couple weeks ago, we had a lady in a wheelchair vomit all over herself and on the floor and everything, and someone had to clean it up. That was a librarian. Is that your dream job? I don't think that's your dream job, but I could be wrong. Maybe if you're into cleaning up body fluids, if that's like a thing for you, if you're like, that really rings my bell. Then this might be the job for you. But if not, I don't know. I got into a little argument with someone online once because I wrote a column about cleaning up crap in a bathroom. And this person was like, I've never cleaned it. I'm a librarian and I've never cleaned up. And I was like, yeah, you work in an academic library. So you have janitors and stuff who do that for you. I was like, this is the battle between academic and public library, the battle no one cared about. I bought some Thanksgiving supplies. I made some stuff for Thanksgiving. My mom abandoned me for, probably 20% of the listening audience of this show. She went out to Phoenix, Arizona. And so I was by myself, except then friend of the show, Nicanor, came and kept me company and raged through the streets of me with me on Streets of Rage for Sega Genesis. Streets of Rage 2, to be exact, where I played Blaze, where I thought her outfit was not tasteful. However, they beautifully animated her hair when she goes jumping through the air to do like a jump kick. So this was not the era of like animated bouncing boobs, but her hair was gorgeous. I was very jealous of the, you know, just watching it. And I was like, I want to do this frame by frame. And that is kind of my hair goals. Watching Blaze through the air and kick some guy in the face named like R Signal. One of the things I had to get to make a pumpkin bread was this was some baking powder, not to be confused with baking soda. And this baking powder I got, I was like, well, see, if I remember correctly, there's like a Native American one maybe, and then there's one called Clabber Girl. She's a clabber girl in the clabber world. Now, this Clabber Girl has this weird picture on the front. It's like a black and white. It looks like, you know, some excerpt from Little Women or something. And it's this girl, and she's made some kind of bread product for her family. And she's like in the foreground, kind of looking off out of the corner of her eye at her family. And then her family is all sitting around, you know, screwing around. And I swear to God, as soon as I got the idea, I couldn't abandon it. But it looks like Clabber Girl has poisoned her bread products and is now going to feed them to her family in order to feel good about herself. Or, I don't know, in order to free herself from maybe a bad situation. I don't want to judge the Clabber Girl too harshly, but something's up. If you looked at that, she's got the shifty eyes big time. As she's serving her family these rolls, as I make, you know, quotes with my hands. I didn't actually do that. I didn't have to. That's the beauty of radio. I don't even have to do anything. I can tell you I did. And then you don't know the difference. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about this new bar in place of my old bar. It's kind of like you just want the old bar back. You want the comfy place. I don't know if I like it being too schmancy. You know what I mean? Where it's like, oh, this is a double IPA. And someone's like, what's the damage on that? And what he meant was, what's the alcohol by volume on it? Not how much does it cost? What the fuck, man? What is this world that we live in? What's the damage on that? I'm not going to be intoxicated from this beer, am I? That would be a tragedy. Good Lord. Good effing Lord. I had a Lucero shirt on, and a guy there was talking to me about Lucero. His story was one time I saw them at an outdoor festival in Denver, like 10 years ago. And I was like, great story. It did get me thinking, though, because, you know, I've been thinking lately about my personal life goals, things I want to accomplish before I'm 40. And things that you should accomplish, if you're listening to this, you should come with me to a Lucero show. It is fun. It's pretty much the most fun you can have on this earth. When I'm getting sad and existential, I think about how lucky I feel that a band that I really enjoy happens to be making music and touring while I'm alive. Like, what if, you know, someone who was born in 1904, and it's like, you know what, this would have been the perfect music to them. They would have fucking loved this shit. But it didn't exist for them. You know what I mean? Or it didn't exist till they were like super old. Or like, what if, you know, somebody 50 years from now, when we're all dead, is like, Lucero is the shit. But it's like, well, they are long gone, my friend. It's over. So I, you know, we're lucky to live in this time together. And if you want to come to a show with me, that should be you should make that a life goal. Because I think you'll have fun. And even if you don't have fun, you'll be able to prove to me that you had no fun. So that's something, right? Stick it in my face. So today I read a Choose Your Own Adventure book. So probably one of the most popular things that I've put up on the Kindle store. I've put, you know, several books on there, and probably the most popular is Pete's Exhaustive Review of Model Land. And so I kind of want to do another similar project. And I was thinking, I've done about 10 or 15 of the Choose Your Own Adventure books, and I was like, well, that's got to be a significant portion of them. Turns out it's not, because there's like 200. And there's like 200 up to the mid-90s or something. You know, I'm not counting like shit that they put out. I don't know if they made those in like 2005. But I was like, what's the reasonable cutoff? Like, at what point in life do people stop reading those? And I was like, maybe when I'm like 12, maybe 10, so I could go up to 1993 or something. But anyway, I read one today, and for the first time, I actually decided to make a flow chart to take me through the book to see, all right, these Choose Your Own Adventures, every fucking time I read one, I get fucked. I die. It's horrible. It's shit. Let me pull up some the reviews I've done on some of these, just so you can kind of see. Oh, and part of this, in case I forget later, is that Pete's Exhaustive Review of Model Land is going to be on sale. It's normally like $7, and I put it up for $1. Because it's Black fucking Friday. So get that. And if it's not 99 cents when you're hearing this, and you're hearing this like immediately after I did it, just wait. It says it can take up to 72 hours, but I think it'll be faster. So let's start with, I guess the first one I shelved was the Abominable Snowman. Damn it. I thought I might try my way through some of these books to see if I've gotten any smarter since childhood. I was an idiot then. I thought that playing Tetris on a big screen TV would allow me to get a much higher score, for example. That is true. I really thought, like, if you got a huge TV, I didn't think that the size would be proportional. And so I was like, you could stack up like 100 million lines. I also made a homemade rocket that succeeded in ejecting its own engine and firing it across the neighborhood, where it barreled into a neighbor's garage door with a resounding smack. That's also true. I took a model rocket engine and put it, I like carved out a hole in a Pinewood Derby car because I was like, this is a rocket car now. And I'm not kidding. It shot, you know, 10 feet into the air, spun as if it was on an axis or something. And then Estes rockets are designed to, you know, launch a rocket up in the air, but then they have like sort of an explosion phase or something because it's supposed to separate the nose cone from the rest, which deploys the parachute. How much of a fucking nerd do I sound like right now? And that's how the parachute's deployed. But anyway, if you've ever been interested in Estes rockets. So, you know, we had a bunch of the engines and we had the igniter thing. The igniter thing is awesome. It was this little yellow box and it has a tiny light bulb on it. And what you do is you set it up and then you put these two clips on the igniter, which you shove into the engine. And so when the two clips are on the engine and the box that you use to ignite it, the switch has a little key. So you have to put the key in there. So like, this is how it's supposed to work. You're like two young boys out to launch some rockets. This is not a euphemism. That's just what it is. And I take the key with me if I'm setting up the rocket so you, like an asshole, can't launch it into my eye. And then I come back with the key, put it in there. You turn the key. The light bulb goes on if there's good contact. You press the button, and that ignites the rocket. So we had all this shit, but we didn't have any rockets. So I was like, I'll just put it in a Pinewood Derby car. And yeah, it shot in the air. And so the part where it kind of bursts to separate the nose cone shoots this rocket engine. It just flies out. It's like a C battery or something. And it goes flying out, hits the neighbor's garage loud as fuck. And then I was just like, that was extremely dangerous. And I'm going to go back inside. Let's see. At this time, in addition to being bad at life decisions, I was also bad at life or death decisions, as demonstrated in Choose Your Own Adventure books. The difference as an adult is that I went at it like a test taker. You know how in health class they had questions where it was clear what they wanted you to mark as an answer? Stuff like, there are risks when you have unprotected sex, colon, A. Sometimes, as long as I'm stupid and in imagination land, B, rarely, because I am a complete idiot managing a small shop in the land of Hyrule. C, always, 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 always. Do you think they have herpes in Hyrule? Anyway, you start to not answer with your honest feelings, but to think about the person who created the test and what they're trying to get you to do. Like, for example, your health teachers probably, they're just like, could these kids not get herpes? Health teachers should get like some kind of a bonus if, you know, 20 years down the road, they just do a quick survey and it's like, how many of these kids got herpes? And it's like, oh, slightly less than average. All right, you're doing it good. So in the abominable, oh God. So in the Abominable Snowman, when you start off looking for your buddy, they tell you that you can look below base camp where the ABS usually hangs out or climb up. Now, the original me would have said they usually show up below camp, and it doesn't really make sense to waste energy climbing up when we could walk down. Screw it, let's coast. But of course, as an adult, I felt the strong hand of fate telling me to go the extra mile straight up the side of a damn mountain. After that, things went downhill. I don't even think I realized I did that. I did manage to engage the services of an Asian slave through a bizarre incense-guessing ritual. I think that was supposed to be a good thing. But then in camp, an abs showed up, and though I managed to snap several pictures and use the flash to scare him off, the shutter didn't close and the pictures were ruined somehow. I'm no expert on digital photography, but it's my understanding that digital cameras may or may not have a shutter. However, it's not like film with the exposure and whatnot. This is truly a cruel twist of fate, is what I'm getting at. So, on the plus, I didn't die. A Yeti didn't drink my spinal fluid at any point, so that's sort of a win. On the minus, I clearly didn't accomplish any of my abs goals. Abs is short for abominable snowman, by the way. So overall, I'm going to have to chalk this one up as a loss, though not in the death column. There is some argument out there on how these are to be read, that maybe I should go back and try again. However, I would argue against that. If they meant for you to go back, they would put the number of the previous decision on pages with shitty endings instead of forcing you to wedge your thumb in there and read it cockeyed, almost as if not looking straight at it meant that it didn't really happen. I would like if they added something like bad ending at the end if you screw up. Good ending if you got one of the good ones. At least that way it'll be clear. Although maybe this was just one of those unfortunate mediocre endings. One book out, Choose Your Own Adventure, has turned out to be a fairly true in that Pete ends up making a series of decisions that results in a truly flavorless life. So that was the first one I did, and today I read Space and Beyond, Choose Your Adventure number 4. It has a fucking spaceship and a dinosaur. It's like a spaceship rocketing off and a T-Rex is looking at it like he might attack it, right? Also, one of the illustrators is named Vorarit Porncurd. Porncurd definitely sounds like a website. Don Plupich. So here's what I did today. It says there's like 42 possible endings, right? So what I decided to do was plot out the book and the decisions. I made a flow chart of basically from the start to the finish and to see all the possible outcomes and what, you know, just to kind of see like, what am I really up against here? Like when I was reading these books as a child, I was a child. What were my chances like? Did I have a possible chance of making it through one of these books? So here's what I discovered. And the flowchart is fucked up looking. It says there's 42 endings, and I think that's about where I got. It got a little confusing because there are a couple different things that lead to the same ending. And so I just listed that ending once instead of listing it again. And I don't know if that counts towards their possible endings. You know what I'm saying? So when they say like 42 possible endings, are they saying like, well, but you come to it two different ways? I don't know. But here's what I learned. If you just purely guessed, you have about a, well, of the total endings, there's a 14% chance of getting an ending. Now, here's where this is flawed, though, is because it's a 14% chance. However, like you make the first decision in this book, especially, is really horrible, because when you see it plotted out, you can see if you make the first decision in this book incorrectly, there's only one possible good ending that you can get. And then there is also an ending that you can get that sends you back to basically the beginning as if you'd made the other choice. There are two options where you don't like die or kill someone else or blow up a planet or end up floating in space or something like that. There are basically two possible good endings. And one is just sort of opens up the greater possibility to good endings. It's not really a good ending itself. So really, there's one good ending. If you make the wrong choice, the first choice, and the first choice in this book is like, you're going to explore space. Do you want to go to this planet or this planet? And it turns out your father's from one and your mother's from the other one. You know, like it's most things being equal in these choices. And if you make the wrong one, you're fucked. You are completely fucked. So that was kind of disappointing to learn. Also, the chances that you get... So I categorize the endings as really bad or less than good. So a less than good might be something where I'm like, well, it's not clear that you're dead. Like one was like you just are end up in this dead-end job and don't fulfill your dreams. Another one might be something like, I don't know, an ending that's just mediocre. You're not dead and you didn't like destroy a planet, but you did something. It's clearly not a good ending, right? And then I did in red diamonds, I put bad endings. These mostly were things where you die, or like there was one where you got turned into, you know, elementary particles or something. There were a couple where it was like you kind of accidentally wiped out an entire planet, and I was like, I'm gonna put that in the red. The chances of getting a bad ending are 83%, or a bad or less than good. It was pretty horrible. I know that math doesn't add up, and that's why I did that whole thing about the possible, you know, difference, whatever. The possible difference in the number of endings. I did find out some interesting facts, though. I thought these books would often, you know, like five different paths would lead to the same ending, right? Or like paths would kind of diverge and then reconverge. That almost never happened. There are like three or four spots where that happens, and it only happens because it's basically sending you back to the very beginning of the book. It doesn't really happen where it's like I'm on path A, and then it branches off into B and C, and I go to C, but then that reconverges with B at some point. Like, that doesn't happen. So on the one hand, I was like, well, maybe this is like a cheap way to recycle the content, you know, and was sort of like, happy to find like, oh, that's not what they're doing. But on the other hand, it made it seem stupider than I thought. Also, I discovered by plotting it out, to my horror, that you can make a choice that sets you on a path that has no possible good endings, right? Like no possible, as I have them, green, yellow, and red. So there's no green endings. And sometimes no even yellow endings. So you can end up on that. But here's what's really fucked up about that. You still have to make another couple choices before you're finally, you know, blown out into space and explode. And neither of those choices results in a good ending. So you're screwed already. You're backed into a corner and they're just toying with you. Also, this makes it very hard to go backwards, because like if you kept your thumb in the last choice you made, you really need to go back like three choices. I don't know how you would do this without plotting it out, which is what I did. I don't know how you would possibly make this work.
Well,
there were two choices where it was basically like a coin toss. One was like, do you want to go into room 99 or room 100? And the other one was like, and you tossed a coin. And it says, does it land heads? You go this. If it does tails, you do this. And I was like, I guess I could throw a coin. But I wasn't even worried about that on this one. Here's what's fucked up. In one path, if you toss the coin, you would either get a red or yellow ending. There was no green to be had. It was both bad endings. So by the time you were tossing the coin, one of the paths was going to lead to not a good ending no matter what. The other one led to, you know, what I would have categorized as a green ending, or it sends you back to the beginning of the book, depending on, you know, what happens when you get past the coin toss, right? Or, I'm sorry, the coin toss determined if you return to the beginning of the book or you got a green ending. And here's what's fucked up about that. Imagine you're going through this book, you're making choices, and then you do a coin toss and you're sent back to the beginning of the book. Now, if I'm playing a game like Chutes and Ladders, I can see my progress. And then when I get sent back to the beginning, I can say, shit, you know, I saw how close I was and now how far I am. But in this case, you really don't know. When you're reading a Choose Your Own Adventure book, you don't actually ever know how close you are to the end. So you don't see yourself falling backwards that way. You just kind of see like, well, I'm back at the beginning. You would have no idea that you almost won, right? So it's like not a real thing. It's like a fake. It's like when they were making it, they were like, oh, they were so close, but now they're back at the beginning. But as a reader slash player of this, you would never know that you were close. How would you ever know that? Right? Unless you're plotting it out. So I thought that was a really bizarre thing to do. There was another bizarre element to it too, which is the choices you made changed the actual universe in which the story happened. So here's the thing. I always assumed that when I was reading these books, like, for example, there's a section in this particular one where there's like a planet and a lot of the inhabitants have some disease. And you have to decide, like, do I think I'm immune to this disease and I can go down to the planet and do stuff? Or do I think I'm not immune and I should play it safe? And the answer is both. Because if you decide that if you think you're immune, and then you go to the next thing, the book is like, you're right, you are immune to the disease, and then, you know, you make other choices. If you decide you're probably not immune and play it safe, it turns out you're not immune to the disease. So this is kind of where these books get fucked up in my mind, because I'm like, that's not playing fair anymore, right? Because before, I had always assumed that, like, the way these books worked was like the real world, in that, not that, you know, because I'm in space and I have an alien friend, I wish, but I thought it was like the real world in that I'm kind of in situations and I make decisions, and those decisions don't reshape the world. In other words, like, I get a flu shot and I don't get the flu, or I don't get a flu shot and I might get the flu and I might not, right? But like, me deciding to get the flu shot or not does not determine whether... No, that's a horrible example. That's the worst example. I don't know why I went there. Okay, I'm allergic to cats, let's say. And it's like, if you think you're allergic to cats, then you're allergic to cats. If you don't think you're allergic to cats, then you're not. And I'm like, is this trying to make some kind of big existential point, or is that me drastically overthinking a stupid book for children? There were two horrific parts. So normally I don't get to like experience all the craziness of these books, because like going through this entire book and flowcharting it out, I could see basically how fucking crazy the whole thing is, right? And how many different possibilities there are and so on. But normally when I go through them, I go through them once. Because I treat them like real life, where I'm like, hey man, you make a decision, and then you're presented with another situation, you make a decision, and eventually you'll get to the end. And I keep hoping that I get to the end of one of these, where I'm like at a happy ending. But so like this one, because I went through the whole thing, I got to see some of the stuff, and some of it was pretty dumb. But my second favorite... For some reason, you come across this race of people, and like I flip to the page and there's an illustration, maybe done by porn, whoever that was, porn curd. I hope porn curd did it. And it's like, it looks like Cabbage Patch, naked Cabbage Patch dolls with the faces of grandmas on them. It's like some race of people who's torn between the past and the future. So they're old and babies at the same time. It's like the most fucked up version of Benjamin Button of all time. Right? That was my second favorite part, because it was disturbing and weird, and I was like, I guess most people probably don't get to this point, so they don't even know what's going on. But my favorite part, there's an ending where you become a space pirate. And, you know, you kind of make some decisions about space pirating, and there's one where you can sort of decide, like, I'm going to really lean into this space pirate business, and that's what I'm doing that from now on. And so you become this big space pirate. But the ending is not good, because what happens is it shows this illustration and it's you in a spaceship and you're surrounded by all these jewels and like paintings and shit, like crazy shit. And then it's like, well, bad news for you, space pirate. The globe decided that, not the globe, the universe, I guess, decided like to basically be a bunch of commies and everyone gets everything and shares everything. And therefore, all of the things that you've collected have no value anymore. And so you're like hauling around the spaceship full of shit that you were going to sell that now has no value. And I just thought that was the funniest, weirdest ending. And also, I was like, I don't know. I guess I'll qualify this as a yellow, because I was like, it's not good because you wasted your life and, you know, you were a space pirate and you didn't have to be. That's probably not appreciated. But on the other hand, it was hilarious. It's like a really bad Twilight Zone. You know what I mean? Where it's like, oh, finally, I can steal everything I've ever wanted to steal. But there's no reason to steal anymore. But it's kind of like, well, yeah, I mean, I guess if everyone just has everything they need, that would work for me too as a space pirate, right? I would also have everything I need, so fuck it. We're all fine. But yeah, I was wondering, you know, it's like, is this guy, what's his name? Norman? R.A. Montgomery. Is this R.A. Montgomery's statement against, you know, communism? Or is it a pro-communism? Is he a commie? Did he ever go before the commission, whatever that was called, where they were like, so, I don't understand anything about how this worked in Hollywood, where they were like, we got to make sure there's no commies in Hollywood. And it seemed like everything I've seen is a courtroom and they call someone up and then they're like, so, are you a commie? And they're like, no. And then they're like, that's exactly what a commie would say. The end. These are Pete's history lessons. All right, everybody. Well, that's going to about do it for us today. Thanks for listening. Get on that Pete's exhaustive review of Model Land. If you haven't got it yet, just buy it, download it, and then read it at your convenience. Tell your friends that this is where you wanna be. All right, we'll see you next time. Are they in home?